How do you measure your self-worth? What is the source of your self-esteem? What is it that makes you feel good about yourself, that allows you to sleep at night to the degree that anyone is sleeping at night right now? What is it that gives you peace? Peace with yourself, with the world, with God? Well, if you're anything like me, you probably find tremendous self-worth in your work, in your accomplishments, doing things, making things, accomplishing things, checking items off of your to-do list. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of that. Until, of course, there is. Until our addiction reveals itself in overfunctioning. Or we experience withdrawal because we're stuck at home and can't do anything, and our minds go into overdrive. A friend of mine who's a therapist often likes to say that we forget very often that we are human beings and not human doings. Can you relate to that? Do you ever feel like a human doing? Like your life is, or maybe should be, a never-ending to-do list? Like you just move from one task to another, thinking about one task to another with hardly any time to breathe or reflect, simultaneously exhausted and anxious? Have you ever felt a bit resentful of everything that needs to get done, of all the demands that are made on your time, but also not quite sure what you do without it? Not quite sure what life might consist of if you ever were to get off the hamster wheel. The British journalist and author Oliver Berkman sent a recent tweet, and I have to say, I'm not big on Twitter, but a friend sent this to me, and I thought it was pretty good and appropriate for this morning. Here's what Oliver Berkman wrote. "I would like to remind you, and also myself, that you don't start each morning in a kind of productivity debt that you have to struggle to pay off through the day in the hope of reaching a zero balance by evening." Does that sound familiar? Do you wake up some days, maybe every day, feeling as though you need to catch up, like you're missing out, like you've already fallen behind even before you've started? Perhaps like you need to justify your existence, your place on this planet, like you have to earn the right just to be. One of the many things that have made this year so difficult is that we are either doing way too much or way too little, or somehow mysteriously both at once. What a crazy year this has been. Blaise Pascal, the 17th century French polymath, and I call him a polymath because he was just good at everything, right? One of those people I really don't like. He was a mathematician, he was an inventor, he was a philosopher, he was also a Christian, he was a theologian. One of the greatest accomplishers of all time, one of the greatest doers of all time, a child prodigy who fulfilled his promise. Blaise Pascal once said, "All of humanity's problems stem from our inability to sit quietly in a room alone." How good are you at sitting quietly in a room alone? I'm not very good at that. I'm terrible. Even the idea kind of makes me break out in hives a little bit. Like, where's my iPhone? Give me my iPhone immediately. We don't really know what to do when we don't have something to do, do we? I think this year we've all come face to face with the truth of Pascal's statement. We're not very good at sitting quietly in a room alone. I was speaking to a member of our congregation this week, and she told me that she had been out taking a walk and overheard a conversation. A mom was pushing her stroller down the sidewalk. Have you all noticed the corona baby boom, by the way? Like, everyone's either pregnant or pushing a stroller right now. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people. So she's out pushing her baby on the sidewalk, talking on the phone to her husband, saying, "I think you need to dig into your inner psyche Because if you are going to continue to burn out like this, we are not going to make it. And the parishioner said she almost laughed out loud because she knew exactly how that woman felt, how her husband felt. Burnt out. Burned out in her job, burned out in her relationships, burned out in her loneliness, burned out by not knowing when and if she can travel or when she might see her family, burned out from worrying about other people, burned out from feeling guilty about not worrying enough, burned out from feeling sad for the year that her children have had. I have no more feelings, this parishioner told me, because really right now none of them are very much fun. That conversation reminded me of a couple other things I heard in the past few weeks. I was on a clergy Zoom meeting. You know, all of my meetings are on Zoom now. The bishop was on there, and one thing he said to us gathered clergy of the diocese is he said, you know, it's been a year that we've been doing this crazy pandemic thing, and we've all reached the limit of our over-functioning. Anyone feel like they've reached the limit of their over-functioning? Or a pastor friend of mine, a pastor's a big Presbyterian church in the Midwest, and he's such a great guy, one of the most even-keeled, well-organized, just good guys that I know. And he said to me recently, you know, RJ, I realized last week that at least one of my tanks is just empty. Just empty. But I think all three of these people, that the parishioner, the bishop, my friend, what they're all saying is that all of the doing, all of the accomplishing, the over-functioning, the earning, it's just not working. It's not delivering. We need something else. In today's gospel reading, Jesus says, rather famously, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And I think so often we read this passage, we hear Jesus' words as a commandment, right? Something we must do or accomplish. Take up your cross. But what I think, as I think about our own lives, the lives of the saints who've gone before us, is that taking up our cross is not actually a choice we make. It's not something that we do. But rather, it is something that God is doing to us, something he is accomplishing in our lives. The great 20th century German theologian and martyr, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, once wrote, "The cross is laid on every Christian. As we follow Jesus, we surrender ourselves to him in union with his death. We give over our lives to death. Thus it begins. The cross is not the terrible end to an otherwise God-fearing and happy life, but rather the cross meets us at the beginning of our communion with Christ. When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die." Now that's a bit of a tough message, right? And we see that in today's gospel reading. As Jesus and Peter, James, and John come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, you know, this great glorious moment. The first thing that Jesus does is take them aside and explain to them what's about to happen. He's going to be betrayed, delivered into the hands of sinners, and killed. And what does Peter do? He rebukes him. He says, "No, Lord, never let it be." But Jesus turns to him and says, "Get behind me, Satan. You have the things of man in mind and not the things of God." Peter says, "I don't want to die. I want to do." He's like us. He wants to do, but Jesus says that's not the way of the cross. So what I really want to say this morning, and I hope that I say it well, is that I think so much of our struggle with doing, with accomplishing, our over-functioning, our exhaustion, our burning out, which feels a little bit like dying, doesn't it? What I want to say is that all of that is part of God's work in our lives. It's not a mark of his absence, but rather his presence and his activity. Because I think what God is doing in this moment, or at least one of the things he's doing, is putting to death that part of us that needs to justify our own existence, to stake our claim, to earn our keep. God is putting to death that part of us that wants and needs to work and exist without him and apart from him, that part of, that wants to believe that we're strong, that we can do this. What God is putting to death is our addiction to earning. He's setting us free from lives defined by our own doing, our own accomplishments, our own possessions, and he's welcoming us into a life defined instead by his boundless, unconditional love for us. His acceptance of us, his presence with us, he's here with us now, his providing for us just as we are. Not as we wish we were, but just as we are. What I think God is doing is he's putting to death our best selves, our imagined selves, in order that we might be loved as our true selves. Because the real Christian life, the truly Christian life, the life lived in following Jesus, is not one lived in earning or accomplishing, self-justifying, but just in trusting, in believing that Jesus has already accomplished everything for us, that nothing more need be done. That same British author, Oliver Berkman, after he wrote that tweet about, beginning every day with a deficit, which I think we can all relate to, he goes on to say this: what if you lived and worked on the basis that you began each day at a zero balance rather than a deficit, so that everything you accomplished, every task you got done, every tiny thing you did to address the world's troubles or the needs of your household or the needs of friends and others, everything you did put you further into the black? What if, and personally I find this thought almost unthinkable in its radicalism, but still, here goes. What if there's nothing you ever have to do to earn your spot on the planet? What if everything you actually get around to doing on any given day is in some important sense surplus to minimum requirements? Now, I don't know if Oliver Berkman is a Christian, but if he isn't, he is well on his way. Because what he's talking about here is Christianity. This is the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, that there's nothing you ever have to do to earn your spot on this planet because Jesus has already earned it for you. Jesus lived the life we should have lived and died the death that we deserve so that we could be set free. Free from sin, free from death, free from overfunctioning, free from the addiction to doing, free from the need to justify our existence. I think that's part of what it means to take up your cross. It means letting that part of yourself die, or rather be killed. Because, you know, life is shouting pretty hard at us. God is shouting pretty hard at us through our lives that it's not enough, it's never enough to let go, to trust him. God is putting to death our old way of living, thinking, earning, and he's giving us a new life, a life of freedom and love, of joy and service to others. Now, I need to say, when we leave here this morning, I have no illusions about the lives we're all going back to. I know that there are things that need to get done. I have those things too, right? We have deadlines to meet, children, spouses, friends, parents we need to care for. We have taxes to be filed. Some of you have already done that. I don't like you very much. But the rest of us have taxes to file. There are groceries to be purchased, dishes to be cleaned, laundry to be folded, many things that sort of have to be done. But as you go about your lives, remember this. Whether or not any of that gets done, or done well, it doesn't change the way God feels about you. You are loved. You are accepted. He is with you. He is working in your life, and there's nothing you can do to change that. I'll remind you one more time of what Oliver Berkman wrote. There's nothing you ever have to do to earn your spot on the planet. because Jesus has already done it for you. May God grant us the grace to remember that, to believe that, to live into the fullness of his joy today and always. Amen.